So this is the 21st of September 2016. I am sitting with Maria Evans. And Maria, could you tell me where you were on the day the Sea Empress disaster happened and what you were doing, what your involvement was?
Well, I was actually here the day of the Sea Empress disaster because, of course, injured birds or oiled birds didn't start coming in until quite a few days later.
So what were you doing? What was your involvement with animals and wildlife, Maria?
I've been running the Bird of Prey and Swan Rescue Centre here for 23 years. So we've been here for 3 years, prior to that in Marteltwy. But of course the Sea Empress was 20 years ago, 96.
That's right. So can you tell me about your memories if we go back in the mists of time?
Yes, indeed. Obviously first heard about it on the news and actually via our postman, Dorian, who I've known for many, many years, still our postman now. He turned up here with the post, as he always did. He used to come up the farm lane with the post before Foot and Mouth. And he'd always deliver it here. And I said to him, "God, your van stinks this morning." He said, "It's not that." He said, "Haven't you seen it?" "Seen what?" So my husband and I walked over to our boundary is the coastal path, and Amroth was full of oil. Mm. From then, there was a lot of publicity, obviously, television, radio, latterly newspapers. The whole of the local news was bombarded with news flashes about the Sea Empress, which of course didn't immediately start leaking oil, but subsequently leaked an awful lot of oil. A few days later, I was called by the RSPCA. They had been giving me updates on what was happening. And they asked me if I would go to Manabir Beach, where the birds were actually starting to come in oiled.
So how long did it take for those birds to start coming up on the shore then?
About 8 days.
Gosh, that's quite a long time, isn't it?
We're quite a long way from Milford Haven.
Yes, you're right.
Mm. So, you know, they did take time. Birds were coming in closer into Milford before that, but of course, you know, my end of the territory is here, Manabir down to Pendine. We figured that out afterwards, but as I say, I was called down to Manabir by the RSPCA, really to see what was going on, and it was a horrifying scene. They'd closed the beach to the general public because there was a lot of heavy machinery on the beach, dumpers, diggers, big oil bowsers sucking the oil out of the sea and off the shore. And it was just a scene of devastation, really. There was about a 10-metre band of oil right the way across from one side of Manabir Bay to the other. And in this were floating dead and dying birds. Beyond that, there were other birds that were oiled, but not totally implicated at that point. So we just set to. There were another couple of people on the beach, and they were bringing birds to me. And I suppose we collected, I don't know, 60, 70, 80. I can't exactly remember how many at that point. And it was decided that I would actually be better employed helping Jean Haynes at the Oil Bird Centre at West Williamston. So I took the birds I had with me in the car and went back there.
What sort of birds were there that you were mainly picking up?
Mainly guillemots and razorbills. More guillemots than anything else. I think we did over 500 guillemots. Mm. If it had been a bit later, which thankfully it wasn't, there would have been the little black sea duck, the scoter, implicated because they're on their way round this bit to their breeding grounds. And there are huge rafts of these lovely little birds, and they would have been really, really badly implicated. I mean, it's fortunate that there weren't too many, in inverted commas, rare birds implicated. There were some unusual ones. We had two great northern divers, which the Americans and the Canadians call loons, and they were absolutely gorgeous. We managed to save one, but one died. And they were also implicated in the previous disaster, the Brea, up in Shetlands, because they were actually up there at the time.
Do you think that had there been more rare birds, would there have been a different outcome or something? Would it have changed anything?
No, it wouldn't. It would have just meant more rare birds would have died. No, everything that could have been done was done for the birds. But in my personal opinion, and I have said this publicly, I don't actually think that the handling and washing and rehabilitation and reproofing of them was in the best interest of the bird. I mean, this is a long time ago, 20 years ago, and one's attitudes do change, especially with experience.
Yes.
You know, one time I would have tried to have saved everything, but now I know it's not necessarily in the best interest of the bird.
And I still get this sense of anger or about the way this was handled then, and so tell me a bit more about your feelings.
As far as the handling of the birds was concerned, I can't really find any fault with anybody. I mean, this, as I say, is only my personal opinion. Everybody was working to their extreme limits as far as the birds were concerned. RSPCA drafted in huge numbers of personnel. Mm. Sadly, none of them had ever handled a bird before. And one or two didn't survive at their hands. But as far as the handling and the politics surrounding the holding of the Sea Empress was concerned, I think it was an absolute shambles. Lessons have been learned. No more single skinned hulled boats left, vessels let in. You know, it was just doing everything on the cheap, really. But, you know, serious lessons have been learnt, and for that I'm grateful. It's just a shame that so much wildlife had to perish for this to happen.
Mm. So could you tell me, let's just take if you go back to a day, what would when you had all these birds coming ashore, what would a day have been like? What time in the day would you have started? How would that day pan out with all these birds coming in?
Well, you have to bear in mind that I had this place to run as well.
Yes.
Birds of prey and swans here. Not that many swans, because really the swans came about as a result of the Sea Empress. When, although we treated 15, the majority of them were sent to RSPCA facilities, one in Cheshire and one down in Taunton. Mm. And in the main, didn't come back here. And I felt this was wrong, and we set about setting up the swan unit here. But going back to the days, I had this place to see to. I was also caring for my elderly, lost-the-plot mother, and a husband, and things like that. So I would do here, and then generally I could get to West Williamston, to the Oil Bird Centre, by about 9:30, depending on what else was happening. And from there on, we would be, there were a huge number of volunteers down there, for which I was very grateful. Mm. Jean and I doing the main washing, and also a lot of interviews and that sort of stuff, because people wanted to know what was happening. There were calls from all over the world that came through. My office was under a bush in the lane, because that was the only place I could get a signal at Jean's. I was there last week, actually. She's amazing. She was 91 this year. So that was quite interesting. But we would work through the day washing birds.
So tell me about how do you wash a bird?
The principle is the same for anything or for every bird that you're washing, that however big or small it is, whether it's a guillemot or a swan, you start off by basically attacking the worst oil bits where the thickest oil is. I mean, some of the birds were just completely covered in oil, but some of them just had patches on. Mm. And we tended when the birds came in to sort of subject them to a triage, if you like. You know, those that are absolutely plastered go over there in the corner, and they get attention, but not necessarily as much attention as the more lightly oiled mm-hmm. ones. I know that sounds a bit hard, but when you're dealing with these numbers of birds, you've got to be realistic. And not necessarily spend time and effort on ones that you know, without a shadow of a doubt, are not going to survive. Mm. Going back to how we wash a bird. Yes, yeah. Right, bird in hand. it was either me holding or Jean holding the bird, and working our wonderful magic cleanser, which is not fairy liquid, through the feathers. All the flight feathers individually, working it through. You had to have fingernails in those days because you needed your fingernails to get it into the feathers. And then the other worst oil, always start with the outside and work inwards, really. Get the worst of the oil treated with arrow tough stuff. And then the bird would be rinsed and then dunked, as we used to call it, dunked in a bucket of warm water, and then washed again with a 1% solution of this wonderful cleanser, which in actual fact is an industrial hand cleanser, but it has it's a completely natural product. It comes from Norway, and it has no
chemical byproducts top of what's already on that bird.
No, absolutely, which was very, very important. Mm. I mean, they had enough problems without... and we did at some point have a concern about the vapour or the fumes that were coming from the birds that were oiled, because again, if these birds were going to suffer from lung problems, mm-hmm. having inhaled, been sitting in, swimming in, inhaled this, and end up with lungs that were completely shot, there was no point in treating them. We were assured at the time that this wasn't going to be the case, that their lungs would be fine.
But later lessons showed that this was incorrect.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. In fact, I took a... what did I take to him? To a vet in Haverford West. It had died anyway, and he did a post-mortem on it, and it was... not a pretty sight, shall we say, the lungs, internal organs. But again, learning curve. You know, nobody down here had ever come across anything as light, as severe as this. There had been other spills, the Christos Betos, the off the hats and barrels some years before, the Brer up in Scotland. But not a lot of information had at that point filtered through to people who were concerned in the Sea Empress. Mm. But there were some people who were extremely helpful and forthcoming with funds and biscuits and things like that to keep the workers upright.
Absolutely, because you know, at the forefront of this, and it's very emotional work as well, isn't it?
Yeah, a lot of sweet things were consumed, believe me.
They were. Yes.
There was a charity called Care for the Wild who came down. John Hodges, who was the sort of principal of the charity, was absolutely great. And he came down and said, "What do you need, ladies? What do you need?" So we told him what we needed. And subsequently, 2 days later, everything that we'd asked for arrived, including several boxes of, what were they called? They were Nice biscuits, but they were sandwiched together with some sort of cream. Ooh. And we had boxes of them. I can't look one in the face now. I'm feeling quite ill. But no, I mean, there were obviously lighter points during this. You had to laugh at sometimes, because otherwise you'd just cry or bang your head against the wall. I remember one particular occasion. I lived in waterproof trousers, obviously. And I used to take them off before I got in my car to drive. And I just left them outside the Oil Bird Centre there. Came back one day. Jean and I had been somewhere. I'd taken her somewhere to a meeting or something, I think. And came back. Some idiot had cleared up and thrown my waterproofs away. Gone. I mean, they weren't. I couldn't even retrieve them from the garbage. Not long after that, a chap who was then working for Welsh Water came. And lovely guy, I've still been in touch with him. He said, "Right, is there anything we can get for you girls?" I said, "Yes, I'd really like a pair of waterproof trousers," because I knew Welsh Water would have them. Mm. So he came back a couple of hours later with what I call a jolly green giant suit. I mean, it's complete with feet and hat and
fabulous. That,
and all in one thing. And it worked very well, because if you're trying to hold a swan while it's being washed, you can get rather damp.
Just going back to those birds once you've finished dunking them.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, I'm digressed.
No, that's absolutely great. Where do these birds then go next?
Right. Sorry, I should have continued. Right, after they're dunked, you get the excess moisture from them with towels or paper towels, which we found very good. And then they were placed in basically drying boxes with heat lamps.
Oh, gosh.
So a sort of area about 4 foot by 4 foot by 3.5 foot high. Solid walls, but with a mesh roof so that hot air and steam could escape from the top. And the heat lamp coming down from above. And we could put probably about half a dozen guillemots together in that.
All right.
So we could probably wash, it, depending on how badly they were oiled, we could probably get through maybe 30 birds in a day.
And how long would it take them to completely dry out?
They'd generally dry out overnight, over 24 hours. And then they would go from there to the proofing pool. Sounds crazy, but the stuff that we used to wash them with, providing you did it properly, they would not have lost any of their waterproofness. Bearing in mind, these are seabirds on water 24/7. Okay. They have got to be waterproof, otherwise you put them back and they die. The stuff that we used did not strip the feathers of their
waterproofing,
their natural oils, nor did it, unlike the use of fairy liquid, put a barrier on the feathers to stop them oiling themselves.
Oh my goodness.
A fairy liquid contains a barrier to keep our hands soft as your face, or whatever the advert was. And this ultimately would put a barrier onto the feathers if used on birds, which is why we didn't use it. So they would then go from the drying boxes to the proofing area, or reproofing area, which were ponds, concrete, man-made swimming pools. And there they would go on there and swim around and have a lovely time, and then come out and drip dry on the side and preen. You could tell instantly whether they were oiled or proofed or not, because if they weren't proofed, they'd sink. rather than swim.
Tell me about that proofing process then.
By preening, they need to get wet to preen. Bearing in mind we're using fresh water, not salt water, and they're used to salt water, which probably would have been a better idea thinking back on it, but there we are, we were, you know. The action of preening, they have an oil gland at the base of the tail, and they'll put their head back and rub their beak on this oil gland and then put the beak with the oil on it on their feathers to reproof them. And they will go through all of their feathers from top to toe. Mm. It's amazing, really.
It is. It's an amazing process. What happened, Maria, to those birds that died, didn't make it? Where were they taken to? Where were they put?
I'm not entirely sure. All I know is that they were probably incinerated. All I know was that there was one particular chap, and I can't remember who he was working for, whether it was Countryside Council for Wales or the council. I can't remember now. I can't even remember his name. But he made a big performance out of the fact that the birds all had to go into colour-coded bags.
Right.
And I thought, well, this really isn't important. You've got dead bodies. Does it matter what they are? I mean, in the end of the day, yes, I suppose it does to a scientist to know exactly how many guillemots are dying, how many razorbills, how many divers, how many eider ducks, how many shell ducks have died. I suppose it does matter to them. But it didn't really matter to us. They were dead and you can't bring them back. So I don't know. I would imagine, but I don't know. I know some of them went for post-mortem. How they chose what they were going to post-mortem, I don't know. But, I mean, you can't really learn a huge amount from a dead oil bird, except it's dead. Mm. We did have a lot of... Going slightly off the subject, I would imagine that they would have been incinerated. Wouldn't have taken a lot, set them alight. With all that oil. But we had, it was really quite sad. Prior to this happening, I think it was either 6 months or a year before, all interested parties in the wildlife welfare were invited to a meeting at what was then the oil refinery Elf. Mm-hmm. And they had spent about £1 million on producing a bird washer specifically for washing oiled birds in, which was a bit like a dishwasher, I suppose, really, except it was all glass. So you could see the bird was placed in a sort of basket inside and had some sort of detergent, in inverted commas, sprayed on it, and then a high-powered shower afterwards. And the birds could be washed successfully in about 7 or 8, the small birds now, 7 or 8 minutes, which compared to sometimes an hour for us doing it manually, depending on how badly they were oiled, was great. There was no stress. The bird was, or less stress, I should say. The bird was just handled in putting it in and then handled in putting it out and then put into a drying cabinet. And this, as I say, was developed by Elf at a fairly huge expense and tried out in the Netherlands, in Holland, by a Dutch wildlife rescue outfit at Piepuren. And they were exceptionally helpful in giving us advice, information, facts. We were in contact with them a lot because apparently they deal with it quite, these spillages quite often, not the magnitude of the Sea Empress, but quite a lot. Mm. But even though Elf set up everything at the refinery, big marquees, swimming pools for the birds to reproof, they had a ministry vet there to supervise things, God knows how many volunteers. The RSPCA wouldn't let them use it because it wasn't licensed in this country. But it had been used successfully in Scotland. Different organisation. As I say, there was so much political garbage flying around. You know, people weren't allowed to speak to some people. And
right, just briefly going back to the birds again. You described a day beautifully for me. Well, we started at about 9:30. So how long would you go on till, Maria?
Sometimes 8, 9, 10 o'clock at night.
And how long over a period of time did this go on for, people bringing birds?
I think it was about 6 weeks in all.
6 weeks.
Yeah, I think we finished about the end of March. Although we were still having dribs and drabs in, but not that much. I think it was about the end of March. But, I mean, we're not talking huge numbers of birds now coming in at that point. It was birds that had been perhaps implicated in just a small slick of oil in one of the isolated bays or something. It wasn't anything major. But, of course, they all had to be dealt with.
Absolutely. You said earlier on about press. Was there any specific line that you were told that you had to give to the press? Or were you free to say
whatever? We were free to say whatever we wanted to. I wouldn't have been doing it if I'd been told to, believe me. But I know a lot of the people that were involved in the clear-up, in the clean-up of the beaches, were told that they couldn't speak to press or media.
Interesting. So this experience, Maria, how did that really affect you personally, your strong feelings about the way we deal with birds and to concentrate on those that are going to have a good chance of surviving and not dealing with birds, en masse? How else did this affect you? What the consequences now for you of that, if there are any?
The consequences are that I have probably become more realistic. Say a few years ago I would have tried to have saved everything, but I now know that it is not in the best interest of the bird, and that is what I strive to do with every bird that comes in here. It is in the best interest of the bird. I happened to meet a chap some years ago. He came here, he was on holiday in Pendine, and he had an owl sanctuary in Essex somewhere, I think. And he very proudly announced to me that he had 132 owls, and some were completely blind and some had one wing and some had one leg. And I said, well, why? Even then, and this was a long time ago, why? Why are they still alive? What is a bird if it cannot fly? If it can't see? And that's another thing, that the oil was affecting birds' eyes as well. I mean, their eyes are very, very delicate. So as a result of that, I have said to anybody who's cared to listen or is interested in my opinion that I would not get involved in... I will wash the odd one or two, if we get one or two, which we do. I mean, I've had two in the last fortnight. Two shearwaters that flew into whatever they call themselves now. Chevron? What used to be Texaco? I'll deal with the odd one, but would never get involved in anything like the Sea Empress again. Never. Don't think it was in the best interest of the birds. A lot of people made a lot of money out of trading on people's emotions, if you like. Holding this poor little oil bird. Oh, yes, we'll send you money. Doesn't help the bird. Might help others after, but certainly not that particular one, which is so oiled that it can't breathe. And I know that happened. It's just very sad that it should have done, and you know, that people did profit from it. I didn't. Got a jolly green giant suit and a new mop, but the mop had sort of three strings left to it. I said to somebody, please give me a new mop. I need a new mop. And they did. They brought me a new mop. I wouldn't get involved again.
That's very interesting, isn't it? Very interesting. Hindsight's a wonderful thing, isn't it?
But, at the time, we all thought we were doing the right thing.
Absolutely, and you have to put these things in the context of the time, always, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah. But, if we did have anything like that again, hopefully lessons have been learnt, one would, unless it gets caught up in politics or...
Yeah, that was the big thing. I mean, we are an area very reliant on the tourist industry. Mm. First of all, we had the Sea Empress, and a lot of beaches were closed. Public access was limited. I'm delighted that I was proved wrong, that, the beaches would clean up quickly. I mean, I met a lot of people who had brilliant ideas. There was a chap who'd come up with, and it was used at the Brea, time of the Brea, although the majority of the oil in the Brea was naturally dispersed because the weather conditions were so bad and the sea was so rough and the oil just dispersed. Down here, this guy came up with this idea of frog matting, it was called, which was an absorbent matting that could be laid on and it absorbed the oil. It really worked. We saw him do it in action. Great. One of the other problems that we had was the dispersants that were being used. This was being sprayed from airplanes, Dakotas. They were being refuelled with this fairly evil stuff at Withybush Airport. And it was being sprayed. It was supposed to be being sprayed not closer than a mile offshore. But my husband and I were over on the cliff path, and we got wet one day when the Dakota went over. Not soaking, but you could feel the droplets coming down. Again, going back to the politics, there were a lot of problems with people with sick sheep and sick cattle. I actually had here a sick horse that wasn't even mine, it was my daughter-in-law's. She'd sent it down here for me to look after, and it arrived on my birthday, arrived end of April, and by the 1st of May it was very ill because it's been eating the grass, it's been sprayed with the dispersant. I had 40 mainly Suffolk ewes then, and we always lamb about the 23rd of March, which is not long after the Sea Empress happened, and the sheep were put out, the ewes and the lambs were put out. And we had something happen that year that had never happened before and has never happened since. It was put down by the vet as facial nerve paralysis. It didn't happen to the ewes, but it did to the lambs. And they would eat the grass, and then they would chew and chew and chew and chew and chew, but they couldn't swallow. So you could see them out there in the field with all this green slime coming out of their mouths. And it was called facial nerve paralysis, apparently. Had never happened before here and never happened after, fortunately.
And nobody asked any questions?
A lot of people asked questions, but there were few replies forthcoming.
Do you think, Maria, that the consequently, in the year after the bird life population suffered, did you see, are you aware? Or
I couldn't say with any degree of certainty. I'm not a bird counter. bird population tends to go in cycles anyway.
Right.
And weather conditions and all sorts of other things have a great influence on this. Was it last year? We had a lot of birds brought in, not oiled, but a lot of weak and starving birds sort of over the Christmas period, about 10 days over the Christmas period. And that was for no other reason except that the weather had been so appalling, the seas so rough, the birds couldn't actually get at the food. They're natural sand eels and whatever fish they're eating, because the seas were always boiling. Virtually everything to do with all animal life is to do with the weather, which we have no control over whatsoever, you know, none at all. As I say, I couldn't say with any degree of authority about the numbers. I'm sure they were, because you'd got less birds to breed. I mean, if you've got, I can't remember how many, I think we lost a couple of hundred, if not 300 guillemots. You've got 300 guillemots less in the area. You've got 300 or 150, say, one of each sex, less breeding.
Were there any of the birds you saved, any follow-ups? Were they ringed? Were they, you know, monitored or anything at all?
Not the ones that we... apart from the swans. The swans swans were ringed.
It's because they're roar birds?
No, nothing. No, they're not even roar birds. Not down here.
Right.
No. There is a fallacy that the Queen owns all the swans, but she doesn't. She owns all... No, she owns most of the swans on the Thames, but not all. There are two worshipful companies that own swans on the Thames. The Worshipful Company of Dyers and the Worshipful Company of Vintners own swans on the Thames. And their numbers are monitored by the annual swan upping, which I personally think is barbaric and outdated, but now they say it's a health check. And apparently the swan numbers are seriously down this year. I mean, seriously down this year. The birds that we dealt with were not ringed, except for the swans, but RSPCA did ring birds, and the average survival rate, I believe, of the majority of the ones that they washed with fairy liquid was about 8 days after release.
Right.
But, you know, perhaps it was just unfortunate. I mean, the weather was good at the time of release. It wasn't lousy weather. So I really don't know.
No.
But I'm not in a position to quote anything. I got that from a video that we were invited, or film night we were invited to. I can't even remember where it was held now. St Thomas Green, I think, in Halford West. And the RSPCA asked us and showed us their film of the Sea Empress.
Were you asked, with all your experience of dealing with these birds, to put down, write a paper, you know, give advice, to go and talk about how you dealt with all this?
Gave a lot of information for the official report, yes. The Sea Empress report. Newcastle University wanted it. They did a report on the Brea as well. And I have both the reports here. They just wanted our facts and figures, basically. I have been asked for help and information. Not for a long time now. You know, a lot of people forget. You know, it's a generation ago.
Oh, yeah.
More than a generation.
More than 2 generations, isn't it?
It's really, really sad when you think about it. 20 years. Where's it gone? Learned a lot, though.
Well, that's the most, I mean, if that's what you can do at the end of the day, go through that and hopefully lessons are learned, or you've learned something from it, so that should, God forbid, anything like that ever happen again, then people know how to deal with.
No, a lot of interesting things did come out of it. A lot of sad things as well, but a lot of very interesting information did come through it.
Is there anything else that you'd like to add to this delightful oral history that you've given me, full of some fabulous fabulous information there, Maria?
Well, no, as I say, it's a long, long time ago.
It is a long time ago.
But I do think it's important, sorry to interrupt you, I do think it's important, and I do know that schools are taking an interest, because I've been in contact with our local school here, Stepaside School, a young lady at the top of the road who I suppose must be, well, junior school anyway. They were doing a big project on the Sea Empress, and it's important.
It is important.
That they learn. I mean, when you come down to it, the whole episode came down to financial greed. But children should learn from our mistakes. I think it's very important that they do.
Absolutely.
So hopefully it will not happen in their lifetime, or anybody else's for that matter.
And on that note, Maria, I must say thank you very much.
It's nice to have met you. Thank you for your time.
Oh, pleasure.